The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, April 1st, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko. And, Chet, I'm excited that we'll be kicking off our Philly season show with our very special guest, Philly's broadcaster, Tom McCarthy.
Yeah, me as well, Bill. T-Mac does a great job as the television voice of the Phillies, and has also done some of the NCAA basketball tournament action on radio, so we'll ask him not only about this year's Fightin' Phils, but also about the Final Four and whether Kentucky will run the table.
Absolutely. Well, hey, before we get started, let's get our Phillies trivia question out there for the listeners to win the signed 8x10 color photo of the memorable home run by Matt Stairs, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, Pennsylvania. To the first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. And, Chet, this one's a dropkick. If you're a Phillies fan, if you don't know this, you might have to turn your Phillies fan card back in. All right, so here we go. We know that in 2014, Jimmy Rollins passed Mike Schmidt as the Phillies' all-time hits leader. Who did Schmidt pass to become the leader back in 1989? Our call-in number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Our shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open throughout the show at 929-477-2855. But we'll do that after we're through with Tom so we can get as much Phillies talk in as we possibly can. Tom, welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
Well, Tom, can you hear us?
He's there.
Well, we're patiently awaiting T-Mac.
T-Mac is on the board. He's here. He might just can't. We can't hear him. Tom, if you're there, can you give us a call back? Because we're showing that you're here, but you're not hearing us.
929-477-2855. Yep.
Yep. Okay. He heard us because he clicked off, and I'm sure he'll click right back on.
Okay.
We've got a lot of Philly stuff to talk about with Tom, and I guess the first thing that we can hit him up real quick on is, who in the world's going to pitch for this bunch?
Boy, I'll tell you. I mean, Cole Hamels is still there, and he's going to be great to watch if he's around. But beyond that, it's going to be a mystery. I mean, everybody's a real question mark.
Absolutely. Hey, Tom, do we have you?
I'm here. You guys hear me?
We hear you now, Tom.
All right.
Modern technology, you know. All right, let's get right into it, Tom. This is Chet, or Jim Chesko, as you remember me from back in the day. Tom, we're talking Phillies, of course, and 3 springs ago, the Phillies were coming off a season in which they won a franchise record 102 games. Now, this spring, a lot of baseball watchers, including Sports Illustrated, are calling them the worst team in either league, one that could lose 100 games. You have an up-close view of this team down in Clearwater, of course. So, Tom, what's your take? Is there any reason for optimism?
Well, I think there's always optimism going into a season based on, you know, past seasons, obviously. There's always a team that's going to surprise, whether it be the Royals last year or even the San Francisco Giants winning the World Championship. I don't think the Phillies are the worst team in baseball. I think there's others that could easily take that, you know, that mantra and run away with it if they choose to. But, you know, this is they're in a phase right now where, you know, they're going to continue to tinker with this roster to try to, A, get young, but also to try to refurbish the farm system in one way, shape, or form. I'm optimistic that on Monday, Cole Hamels will face Clay Buchholz, and the Phillies have every opportunity to start the season 1-0. Beyond that, you know, you kind of take it game by game. The health of Utley, the health of Howard, they're going to be huge, and the evolution of Cody Ashe at third base is going to be it has to be important. And when Dominic Brown does come back, he needs to produce. Those are the guys, those extra guys that they're banking on. And if they don't, then, yeah, it could be a long season.
Yeah, Tom, you mentioned a lot of question marks. One of those question marks is the outfield. As you mentioned, Dom Brown not starting the season on the active roster. He's on the DL. So it looks like it'll be Grady Sizemore in right field, Ben Revere moving from center to left, and a new Rule 5 pickup with a great first name heading into the center field slot. That's Odubel Herrera, if I'm saying it right.
Odubel. Yeah, it's Odubel. Yeah. And he's a good pickup. You know, it's not often that you can find a Rule 5 guy that can potentially contribute the way he does. He's not going to provide a lot of power, obviously. But he is a tremendous athlete. He's going to get on base, and I like what I see from him from a speed standpoint. He's aggressive. He's got an edge to him. There's sort of a bounce in his step. I don't know where they're going to bat him. I know that they'd like to have Galvis bat second because he's a switch hitter and they're so lefty dominated. But I think there's a good chance he bats second against right-handers if the team they're facing doesn't have a dominant left-handed bullpen. But he's been really good. I mean, the scouting for the Phillies has been flawed over the last few years, but finding him has been a real positive. I think he's going to help this team. I don't know if he's an everyday player, but on this team he is. Moving forward, he could be a versatile utility guy, second base, outfield, if they're able to piece together something else from an outfield standpoint. It obviously lends itself to the depth questions in the outfield. I mean, the Phillies are banking on the likes of Jordan Danks and Jeff Francoeur, and you mentioned Grady Sizemore. And that, you know, on paper, you look at that and say, well, that's not going to get it done. But hopefully in the future it'll lead to somebody else sort of coming in and being able to solidify those spots.
Well, Tom, it's, you know, if Rivera's going to start and Herrera's going to start and Galvis is going to start, who's going to provide the power for this club? I mean,
even if
Ryan Howard is able to bounce back with 30 home runs, which I don't know if he can. I mean, who's going to provide any power?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, this is a team that was built so much on the three-run home run during the run of five championships or five divisional championships. Yeah, they're not built on the home run anymore, obviously. Howard, Utley, Ashy, Brown, when he comes back, they're going to have to be the power sparks, but they're by no means what this team used to be from a power standpoint. This is a team that's going to have to manufacture runs, get the runner home from third with less than two outs. They're going to have to rely on this bullpen to keep tight games close and hopefully catch lightning in the bottle with somebody. But this is not a team that's going to be built on power like they were in the years that they won those five straight divisional crowns.
Hey, Tom, one guy who does have power is Darren Ruff. Now, is he going to be on the opening day roster? For whatever reason, it seems like he's never been one of Ruben Amaro's favorite guys.
Yeah, I think he'll be on the opening day roster. I don't know where he's going to play, though. You know, we were talking about this today on the air. I think everybody's in agreement outside of the ball field that you should just let him go out there and play. I mean, I think he's an adequate enough outfielder compared to what they usually have out there that he can get the job done. I think he can hit 20 home runs for them, if not more. But for some reason, Ruben said today that he is not in the mix to be one of the starting outfielders. I'm surprised by that, and I'm hoping that he makes the team, gets some at-bats, starts to show some pop, because he has been given some opportunities, not long-standing opportunities, but he has been given some opportunities. But if he can get himself somehow into the lineup, whether it be, you know, spelling Ryan Howard at first base, he took ground balls at third base today, I don't think that's a possibility in the long term. But I do hope that he gets some chances so he can provide some kind of a boost offensively and gets a chance to play a handful of times a week. I think he's going to make the team, though. They are so left-handed heavy, they need that right-handed bat off the bench.
Well, Tom, I know the Phils' future shortstop, J.P. Crawford, I actually saw him play last year for Clearwater, so it's pretty hard for me to imagine that he's anywhere close to being a big league ready shortstop. But, you know, can they survive the season with Freddie Galvis, who just struggles so bad at the plate?
They can survive with him defensively. There's no question about it. Offensively, he has had a decent spring. And what he's been doing is exactly what he needs to do during the regular season. Today he hit a home run, he blasted it. I mean, he got his bat head out, and it was a shot. But that's not what they're expecting from him when the season begins. He needs to be able to choke up like he's doing, slap the ball to left or right field, and just hit enough, because his defense, he's a special player defensively. JP is probably 2 years away. I mean, as you mentioned, he was in Clearwater last year. He's got the oblique strain right now, so he's on the shelf for the next 4 to 6 weeks. To me, Freddie can fill in fine. Freddie would be great on those teams that won the 5 straight division crowns because there was so much offense, and his defense would have been huge if, let's say, Jimmy Rollins wasn't there on an everyday basis. In this day and age, it's magnified more that his offense is a little light because they don't have a huge offensive weapon. But I think he can hit enough. I think he can. I think he's going to have to. I mean, it's either Freddie or go out and get somebody, but there's nobody out there that can fill the void left by Jimmy Rollins.
Tom, one potential offensive weapon, a guy you alluded to earlier, Dominic Brown. Dom Brown, as you mentioned, starting the season on the disabled list. It's really important, like you said, to have him come back and provide some power. But other than that six-week stretch in 2013 that got him onto the All-Star team, he's been something of an enigma. Why has Dom been such an underachiever, and what are his prospects going forward?
Yeah, it's funny because he's got this body that is so athletic-looking. And you think back to when he was that All-Star after that first half of the season, you think, wow, this is a kid that can do this on an everyday basis. He's gotten into some very bad mechanical habits that I think has impeded his swing. There's more of an uppercut than what you would normally want. Defensively, he's got a plus arm. Defensively, he doesn't go back on balls the way you'd like him to. But you can accept it if he's going to hit 27 to 30 home runs. He's worked hard in camp trying to get his swing back to where it was 2 years ago. Can he do it? I don't know. I really don't. They obviously need it to happen in order for the team to have any semblance of success. I don't know if he can do it or not. I think what we saw last year is concerning going into this year. I don't think that they'll give him a long leash, though. I think if he struggles and has the same kind of struggles that he had last year, they'll move on and put somebody else there. I don't know who. You know, they have the likes, as we said, of Jordan Danks and Brian Bogusevic and Russ Kanzler, people like that. They have Grady Sizemore, but I do think that they will move on pretty quickly if he does not show any improvement from last year.
Well, Tom, we know we have Cole Hamels as the ace. Cliff Lee is down. Who in the world is going to get people out?
Boy, that's a great question, too, from a rotation standpoint. What was a straight 2 years ago has turned into a huge question mark. That, to me, guys, is the biggest issue for the Phillies is their starting rotation. I'm okay with the bullpen. They'll be as good as they were last year, if not a little bit better. Do I think they'll score enough runs? As long as the starting pitching is good, they might be able to get away with the offense they have. But after Cole Hamels, there's a lot of guys that are very similar. That's why I thought it was important for Miguel Alfredo Gonzalez to make this team and to be successful, because he throws 95, 96 miles an hour. It's unfortunate that he couldn't find the strike zone. So now you're leaning on Aaron Harang, David Buchanan, who's probably the most different out of the four others besides Hamels, Jerome Williams, and then it's a crapshoot for who the fifth starter is going to be. Billingsley is moving along pretty quickly. He's pitching tomorrow in another minor league game. So there's an expectation that he's going to be back within 3 weeks. So that gives you a little different look, because he is topping off at 94, sometimes hitting 95 miles an hour. But this has a potential of being a staff that's going to give up a lot of home runs and a lot of runs. They've got to throw strikes, and it's got to be down in the strike zone. This is a – I don't know if you guys remember the staffs that Larry Boa had with Omar Dahl and Joe Roa and people like that. This is sort of to the equivalent of that, and that's a little concerning going into the season.
Yeah, just a little. I'd say it's a lot concerning, Tom. Now, one of the strengths, though, is the bullpen. The question is, you know, can they get to these guys, the Ken Giles, the Jonathan Papelbon, Jake Diekman? Let me ask you another question, though. What about Hamels and Papelbon? Are they going to be ex-Phils at any time soon? What do you think is going to happen with their trade talks?
Yeah, I think Papelbon has more of a chance to go than Cole does. Now, Cole is probably the best piece the Phillies have to bring back a large portion of prospects, a large grouping of prospects. But if they trade him, then they really don't have anything else. You know, you can go with the journeyman like they're doing with a lot of the other spots, but wouldn't it be better to have that number one? And if they do turn this around within the next year or two, then he's still going to be 32, 33, or even 34 with still frontline stuff. So I think Papelbon's the most likely to go. I think Hamels brings you the best pieces back. Papelbon, if they trade him, then Giles or Diekman can slide into the closer's role. And for Hamels, if they trade him, I don't know who slides into that lead spot in the rotation.
Hey, Tom, I'm Phillies fans are Phillies fans, and baseball fans as a whole are what they are, but I'm a guy that's really rooting for Ryan Howard. And,
yeah.
You know, as things have not gone his way the last couple of years of the injuries, and I guess he has personal issues and all that stuff, but I mean, how do you see Howard? I mean, he looks fantastic this spring physically, but he's got the giant hole in the swing. And, you know, is there a chance that this guy's got a chance to be really good again?
I think he's got a chance to exceed the numbers he put up last year. You know, last year he had more guys in scoring position than anybody else in baseball. Still finished shy of 100 RBIs, but I think he has a chance to do better than what he did last year. He is moving around better at first base. I think his issues at the plate are different than last year. This year, he seems to be ahead of the ball more than behind the ball, and I think it's a timing thing. He had a double today. He's pulling more balls, which I think is a good thing, to the outfield. He's not shooting it power-wise the other way. I think it remains to be seen. He's not the same player he was 4 years ago before the Achilles injury. He just isn't. But I do think he can exceed last year's number, which would be okay. Are there going to be guys on base for him to do that? Boy, that's a pretty good question. Physically, though, talking to him the last few days, he feels a whole lot better. His diet has given him a chance to cut down about 18 to 20 pounds, and he's hopefully, as he said, going to sustain that as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I have one more Phillies question for you, and I know we want to hit you up on the Final Four for just a second since you broadcast us some games. But as we sit here in 2015 and, you know, back in 2007, 2008, 2009, the Phillies went all in. They went all in to kind of try to build a dynasty, made a lot of trades, basically depleted the farm system, and now they're paying the price for it. You think it's a good move? As it turned out, I mean, it doesn't look
right
today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely think it's a good move. For me personally, those were five of the more enjoyable years, or four of the more enjoyable years that I had as a broadcaster. Now, that's selfish, but from a fan standpoint, the ballpark was sold out every single night. This is only, I think this guy's is going to be a lull. This is not going to be something that's going to be like the Phillies of the late 80s, early 90s, late 90s, 2000s before Boa took over. This, I think, knowing the ownership group, knowing what Pat Gillick's thoughts are, this is only going to be a one, possibly a two-year build. And then this team should be back to competitive and challenging for the National League East. But I think it was the right move. But you think about it. The only real, and I'm probably leaving somebody out, but the only real potential star that you're seeing in all of those trades that the Phillies made, I guess there's a couple. Cozart is going to be good for the Marlins as long as he's not suspended by baseball if the gambling allegations are true. And I think Darnell is going to be very good for the Mets. But beyond that, Singleton was sent down yesterday by the Astros. The other kid, that the Dominguez kid who they also threw into that trade, was sent down 2 weeks ago. Zede is out of the Astros organization as we speak. Trevor may be part of the Twins rotation, but he's not the power pitcher people anticipated. Drabek was put on waivers by the Blue Jays, just picked up by the White Sox. So, to me, it all paid off. I think there's a couple of trades that the Phillies would love to have back. One in particular is the Hunter Pence trade. I think they'd love to have mm-hmm. that trade back right now because that hasn't worked out. Tommy Joseph hasn't turned into the catching prospect that everybody thought he would, including the Giants. And I just think that they would like to have that one back if they could.
Yeah, I one other thought that I'd like to get your take on, and that's, you know, back when the Phillies won the World Series and they were banging the ball all over the park, and it seemed like they let, you know, when they let Jason Worth go, which I wouldn't have paid him $125 million either, but I liked the heck out of Jason Worth and what he brought. But, you know, the philosophy went from hitters to pitchers, and that kind of all backfired because pitchers are so fragile and arm injuries are arm injuries.
They are. I still like the approach, but I also think that you need to have a balance of offense. And I agree with you. As much as I love Jason and would have loved for him to stay at the Phillies, I mean, the Nationals overpaid for his services. I mean, they did, but that mm-hmm. happens in baseball all the time. But they were able to supplement that by bringing Pence in. But then they traded Pence instead of paying him the $13 or $14 million a year. I think you need to have a balance. I think you need to have a very good starting rotation. I mean, I would kill to have that rotation again. If the Phillies had the rotation they had several years ago with the offense they have right now, they'd be okay. Nobody would be talking about 100 losses because they would probably have enough offense to be able to do something. I think the philosophy is basically the same. They are going to go after more pitching and try to balance it out with good defense and enough hitting. I think they're going to try to, just from the Nola kid, who I think looks pretty good, to Jesse Biddle, who looks way better, which is a good sign. I think they're hoping that their rotation of the future is similar to the rotation they had a couple of years ago.
Hey, Tom, you'll do a great job broadcasting the Phillies, of course, this year, no matter what they do on the field. You also did a great job from what I've heard in the early rounds of the NCAA tournament this year. I caught some of your work. Now we're down to the Final Four. Who do you like?
Well, I picked Kentucky from the beginning. I just think it's so hard to go against them. Although I think Notre Dame gave Wisconsin a pretty good game plan on how to possibly beat them in the next round. And I think Wisconsin, although I picked Arizona to beat Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin is better suited to do it because of their bigs that can shoot over the top of the bigs of Kentucky. But I just think Kentucky's too tough. I think it's been an unbelievably entertaining tournament. I don't think Kentucky's run away with anything. I think they've had a fight for it, and I think that's a good thing. But I just think that they have too many weapons. I mean, they can go off the bench and bring in guys that would be starters and possible NBA draft picks. And that's just really hard to duplicate for anybody. But I do think it's going to be a hell of a game between Wisconsin and Kentucky. I just think that based on what Notre Dame did, Wisconsin has a chance to do something similar to Kentucky.
All right. Now, Tom, there was a play in an NFC Championship game about 33 years ago involving Joe Montana and Dwight Clark that came to be known as the catch. And then there was this moment in June of last year that we'll call the T-Mac catch.
Robin smokes deep to center field, out toward our vantage point.
Tom gets home! Yes!
Not good that he hit a home run, but I was able to catch it.
That was quite a moment, Tom.
It was an unbelievable moment. I mean, you know, you never try to make anything about you as a broadcaster. At least I don't try to do that. It's always about the game and what's happening on the field. But that was, you know, I've had several moments that I will never ever forget, whether it be Princeton beating UCLA, in Kirill's last year being the coach at Princeton University, or Roy Halladay's perfect game. I mean, that was unbelievable because we had been out there the week before. I was out there the week before just to see if any balls would come out to that area, and I was trying to gauge fly balls and all this other stuff. It wasn't even close. There was nothing close to coming out there. And when Freddie Freeman hit that ball, it just sounded like he hit it really well. If I would have dropped it, I would have never heard the end of it from my kids. They would have exploited it over and over and over again if I had dropped that ball.
That's for sure.
It was great, though. It was a great night. The whole atmosphere was awesome. You know, just being out there and being among the fans. I mean, it was just an awesome, awesome night.
All right, well, Tom, we do a segment on our show with all of our guests. We call it 10 and 5, and basically what it is Chet asks the questions, and you get 30 seconds or so to answer them, and if you're up for it, he's lined up and loaded for bear for you.
All right, let's go. I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go. 20 or 30 seconds per response. So, Tom McCarthy, now we hope not, but the Phillies could have a long season. Give us a potential pleasant surprise or two.
The biggest pleasant surprise to me will be Odubel Herrera and what he could bring to the team. I think that the energy that he brings and the spark is going to be huge for this team. And I think that, you know, that may not bring all the fans out, but I think that's something for people to look forward to. And I think Aaron Nola eventually being brought up sooner rather than later could also be a pretty good bright spot for them.
Number two, if Cole Hamels is traded during the season, who's going to lead the Phillies in wins this year?
Aaron Harang will lead the team in wins because he'll be the one that's around the plate the most and could probably linger long enough for innings to be able to pick up enough victories or cherry pick some wins as the year goes on.
All right, he's now an ex-Phil, but is Jimmy Rollins a Hall of Famer?
I do not think he's a Hall of Famer. I did not think Barry Larkin was a Hall of Famer, but I think the fact that Barry Larkin is in the Hall of Fame, by the time Jimmy's career is over with, he's going to have to be considered. If Larkin is in and if Jimmy goes on the same path that I think he's going to go on, he will have eclipsed most of Larkin's numbers except for average and on-base percentage and all-star starts. So I think that people will make him a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, though.
Number four, any big-time broadcaster like yourself, Tom, will have his share of fans and his share of critics. Just ask Joe Buck. How do you deal with the criticism of your work?
I take it as constructive, and if I think it can help, I'll use it. If not, it kind of goes into the pile of minutia, because I think being in this part, this kind of a world and this kind of a life that I have, there's going to be people that like you. There are going to be people that not like you. The key for you is to separate what's worthwhile and what's not.
All right. Who were your sports broadcasting heroes growing up in the 70s and early 80s?
Well, the biggest hero that I had, just because I listened to him all the time, was Bob Murphy. I thought he was as good a radio announcer as you will find, because he was able to sort of relate to the fan and sort of tell the story. Obviously, Vin Scully was huge. Ernie Harwell was huge. I've gotten a chance to meet all three of them, and they were unbelievable resources to talk to. And then, of course, HK. I mean, growing up in New Jersey, there was sort of a triangle of Yankees, Mets, and Phillies games that were always on in my house. And just the way Harry called the big moment, there's nobody that can call the big moment the way he did.
This is just a bonus question. You lived in Brick. Who did you root for over there?
I rooted for the Mets. We were sort of a Mets-Yankee territory. The Phillies were about a half hour south, but we were so close to Veterans Stadium, Shea Stadium, and Yankee Stadium that my dad would take myself and my brothers to at least a dozen games a year, but it was pretty much a third Phillies games, a third Met games, and a third Yankee games.
All right. What do you remember most about your days doing play-by-play for the Trenton Thunder in the late 90s?
I remember the heat in the summer, the fact that I was amazingly overweight, and when I had to pull the tarp, I was out of shape within a matter of five steps. I remember how great the fans were and how electric the ballpark was, and how that, I think, has led me to where I am right now, because I have an understanding of not only the fans, what it's like for a family of four to pay money to go to a game. And it just opened up so many doors for me. It was just an incredible, incredible experience.
All right. Now, you referenced this earlier in the show, but you had a memorable night calling a basketball game on the radio in March of 1996. I guess you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it was Princeton beating UCLA, which was an unbelievable experience, and it was my first sort of foray into doing college basketball and reaching the NCAA tournament, and it was far more than anything I ever thought it would be. It was just an incredible experience.
And our final couple of questions. Besides a great head of hair, what will Ben Davis bring to the broadcast booth?
He'll have the only head of hair. No, I mean, Murphy,
exactly.
You know what he's going to bring? He's going to bring a likability. He's going to bring an assertiveness. He's going to bring a poignancy. And he's going to bring a succinct nature, which I think is good and I think it's needed. He's already broken himself into the group. Our room is as good as it always has been. I always say our room because it's our office that we all share together. And I just think he's going to be here for a long time. I mean, this is a guy that could conceivably do this for 25 years.
And finally, Tom, a lot of great candidates here, but what is your favorite baseball movie?
My favorite baseball movie is The Natural. And, well, I should take that back. Let me rephrase that. My favorite baseball movie is 8 Men Out. Whether it's realistic or not, I'm not sure. But then again, neither is The Natural. But it would probably be 8 Men Out because I think the baseball scenes in that movie are as clean and as pure as any baseball movie that you'll find.
All right, good answer. Tom McCarthy, thanks for playing 10 and 5. And by the way, with your appearance on our little radio show, you've cemented your status as the nicest guy in the broadcasting business.
I like that. That's always what I strive for.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, guys,
Tom,
have a great night.
We appreciate you joining us and look forward to a great season.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care.
All right. Well, Chet, let's thank our sponsors. We'll come back and we'll mull over some of Tom's comments. We'll go from there. So let's thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Chet, let's get our trivia question out there again one more time. This is to win the signed 8x10 color photo of the memorable home run by Matt Stairs, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown. The first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. We know that in 2014, Jimmy Rollins passed Mike Schmidt as the Phillies' all-time hits leader. Who did Schmidt pass to become the leader back in 1989? Again, our call-in to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Okay, Chet, what's your take on T-Mac's comments?
He tells it like it is. I got to give him credit. He knows it's probably going to be a tough season, but there are some things to watch for, and that includes, you know, how Dom Brown will come back, and is he finally going to be the player we think he could be? He knows it may not, but we're going to watch that. We're going to see how Cody Ashe handles third base, and we're going to see if this center fielder, Herrera, can actually hit. He won the Venezuelan batting title, and he's fun to watch, that's for sure. So, I mean, there are some things to watch for, even if they are a team that doesn't win a whole lot of games.
Yeah, I think what I took from it is interesting as fans, and you know, you and I talk about this quite a bit, is he sees things pretty much exactly how we see things. You know,
yep.
They're going to struggle offensively. They're going to have no power, and they're going to struggle on the mound. And, you know, their strength is probably the back end of the bullpen that's going to be awful hard to get to.
You got that right.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I was going to mention is the Freddie Galvis part. You know, I kind of got fumbled up with you there a little bit, but what I was going to ask him is what was good enough? You know, he says if he can hit good enough, but I was thinking is good enough 240 is good enough 275. You know, to me, it's got to be better than 240.
Well, to be honest, if he hits 220 and plays good defense, I'll be satisfied.
Ooh, man. Ooh, I don't know that I could be satisfied at 220.
Well, look, they're not going to contend anyway, so.
Well, but you know what? We haven't played the first game yet, so we gotta still think there's hope after spring training.
That's right.
All right. Well, hey, March Madness is down to the Final Four, and since tonight's prediction night, we're going to pick the Final Four, and then we're going to make our Phillies picks for the season. We've got Kentucky versus Wisconsin, Michigan State versus Duke, and you know I can't think of the last time that the four favorites. Or close to the favorites, reach the Final Four. And this tournament has, you know, there's no underdog in it like there usually is, but this has coach star power. It's got lottery draft player star power. It's got a team with a chance to go 40-0. course, you got a local guy, Bo Ryan, you know, out of Chester, coaching Wisconsin. What more can you ask for? This is what it's all about.
Yeah, a lot of early round upsets, but then things went pretty much the way they were supposed to for the most part. And I'll tell you, that Kentucky-Wisconsin game could be a classic. Notre Dame, of course, gave Kentucky an incredible battle, much more so than most people thought possible. But this semifinal this weekend should be another great one. And I'll tell you, it would not surprise me if the Badgers knocked off the Wildcats. Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker are both playing well. Kaminsky was terrific in the Badgers' one-point loss to Kentucky in the semifinal a year ago. I know Kentucky's tough, obviously, at 38-0, but this game could go either way. And, boy, I'll make my pick in a second. And Duke-Michigan State should be a great one, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if you look at – if you sat down with your bracket at the very beginning and didn't pick the teams, you picked the coaches, other than adding Rick Pitino into this mix of five, you probably have the right teams. I mean, this oriented – Final Four, no doubt. And with that reason, and I've had Kentucky all along because I just thought they were that good, but as the tournament's played out, I love Michigan State and the way they're playing. But I think Duke right now is playing as good as anybody in the country, and I'm gonna go Duke.
Really?
Yeah.
Duke to win it all, huh? Okay. My upset pick of Arizona didn't happen. They had a nice run, but Wisconsin was too much down the stretch. So since Wisconsin ousted Arizona, I'm going to go out on a limb and take the Badgers to knock off Kentucky and then win it all.
The Badgers. Well, you know what? Yep. I have no problem if Bo Ryan wins. I'd be absolutely thrilled if Bo Ryan were to win. All right. Well, we'll sort of talk about that in our next show, and because it'll be over by then. It's we're getting there. What about the Temple Owls last night? Holy cow! They throw bricks up there from 3-point land and cost them the game. A 3-point game, if they'd have just shot 30% from 3-point land, they'd have won that game going away.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for them. I mean, first they got snubbed in the NCAA tournament, and then they get to the semifinal of the NIT, and they have a good chance to win. They had the lead for a good chunk of the game, but then, like you said, they just took some bad shots, or, you know, shot poorly anyway, and came up a little bit short. So close, but no cigar for Temple.
Yeah, and it was funny because you throw up 19 three-pointers and only make two, but you weren't a good three-point team going into the game. So why that was going to change, I don't know, and why they felt the need to keep throwing up threes, I just didn't understand that. But it cost them. It cost them, and
yeah, now,
someone else was going to the championship.
I saw some of our friends on Facebook criticizing Fran Dunphy for that. Does he get some of the blame?
Oh, I think he absolutely does.
All right.
I guess the thing that people like about Dunphy is he lets players play. He also can't let your players lose, you know. When you're 0 for 15 in the second half, stop doing it. Right?
and even
came down to an open three there at the end of the game and he missed that, you know. So, yeah, I think Dunphy absolutely gets the blame. Now, he can't shoot it for him, but he can sort of, you know, design some things or make some different things happen. Wait,
yep.
I wanted to ask you last week, and we didn't get to it, and it hasn't, it's only gotten better. What about Nerlens Noel and the 76ers as a whole after the deadline? They're playing halfway decent, and Noel has certainly stepped up his game.
Boy, I have a lot to say about Nerlens, but I'll try to keep it relatively brief. In a nutshell, I'm incredibly impressed. He's been playing terrific over the last 6 weeks or so, a double-double machine. He's gotten career highs in points two or three times, including a 30-point outburst recently. He's making steals. He's blocking shots, just looking every bit like the number one draft pick that he was projected to be before the injury. And, of course, he's doing all of this of late since the trade of Michael Carter-Williams, and even gave a little backhanded diss to MCW after Monday's game against the Lakers, calling Ish Smith, of all people, the first true point guard that he's played with. So that's a very interesting comment on the part of Nerlens, but yeah, he has been great, and I just hope Sam Hinkie doesn't now decide to trade him.
Oh, I have to believe, and I don't know, the way trades and things have been going on in Philadelphia sports here over the last year, I'm not sure I know anything about anything, but I would certainly think that this kid who won't be 21 years old until a couple weeks from now, you know, I certainly think that he's a building block for the future. If you're going to keep drafting kids like him and then giving them a year or two and trading them, you know, then there is no plan and you'll never go forward. I certainly think this has to be a building block.
Yeah, let this play out now. I mean, I think we're over the trading. Now it's time to start building. I really want to see what happens when Noel and Embiid get on the court together. So that's going to be an interesting tandem. But then you got to wonder what happens if they do get, you know, the first or second pick with the lottery balls in the June draft. Do they go for Okafor or one of the, you know, big guys who are going to be one and two probably? That's going to be interesting because they are the best players probably, but the Sixers really need a point guard. So, you know, are they going to take Russell or the guy from China? I don't know. We shall see.
Yeah, well, and it would be great to be in that position because if Embiid and Noel can play and they feel good about that, then they can trade that pick, even if it's a lottery pick. They could trade it for a star-powered guard that can run the ship here. And now all of a sudden you're putting together a pretty good club pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, if you would have told me before this season that the Sixers would trade Michael Carter-Williams midseason for not a whole lot in return and still win, you know, 18 to 20 games, they're at 18 right now, they won 19 last year, I would have said no way in heck because, I mean, the roster wasn't that great to start with, and I had them pegged for about 10 to 13 wins this year, to be honest. I thought they might challenge that 9-73 Sixers team from 40-plus years ago. So the fact that they've won 18 already with still, what, 10 games or so left, I'm impressed. You got to say Brett Brown is a pretty good coach. And, you know, they have made a couple of good finds also in Covington and in Grant and some of these other young guys. Even Ish Smith, I mean, he has looked pretty good since they got him a few weeks back. What is he averaging, 12 points a game, 6.5 assists? That's not bad.
No, not at all. You know, and that's what, to me, to see how this all sorts out, like you're saying, and, you know, who's here next year? Like I say, it's getting to be time. It's getting to be time to make the move.
Yes, it is. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the lottery balls and with the draft.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we've got a caller. Let's see if maybe we have a trivia answer. I want to give away this Matt Harris photo. Hang on. Hello, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen.
It's Adam.
Hello, who do we have?
Adam, what's up, buddy?
What's up, guys?
How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, man. How about yourself?
Good, good.
I believe I have an answer for you, sir.
Do you?
I'm
going to
go with Richie Ashburn.
Richie Ashburn is the correct answer, my friend.
Woo!
There you go.
We have a winner.
Bells and whistles set.
I told you it was too easy, Bill. Too easy.
No,
yeah, that's
good.
Three things I've gotten today from Carl's Cards.
Woo! So there you go. Carl
good.
Anderson certainly appreciates that. Well, Adam, I believe
yeah.
I have your information, and we will send that out to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you for calling.
You guys, have a good one. Thank you for the show, guys.
Take care.
All right. Well, Ted, hey, let's jump over to the Eagles right quick. And they made a couple more moves this week. They re-signed D'Amico Ryans. They signed wide receiver Miles Austin. Good moves, bad moves. And more importantly, do you really think this could mean moving Michael Kendricks out of town?
Well, I like that they're keeping D'Amico Ryans around. Even coming off the injury, he's said to be a real leader on that defense. So I like the move, which apparently also gave them a little more cap room because of the way they structured the deal. But I really, really hope that it doesn't mean Michael Kendrick's days are numbered. I love the way that guy plays. Plus the fact we don't know how Ryans or Kiko Alonso, the new guy, will be coming off their injuries. So please, Chip, keep Kendricks. And finally, don't get me started on Miles Austin. Really, he can't stay healthy. He's on the downside of his career. Plus, he's another ex-Cowboy, another reason not to like him. On the positive side, he only got a one-year deal. But no, I am not excited about the signing of Miles Austin, and I'm still very concerned about the whole wide receiver position on that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like Michael Kendricks. I think he's a star. You know, he's getting ready to be a Pro Bowler. I believe if he'd stayed healthy and not missed those four games this year, I believe he would have been a Pro Bowler. And I do like DeMeco Ryans a lot. We know coming off Achilles is not easy. This is his second Achilles, and he's already in the 30-plus group. So, you know, if you move Kendricks, even if you use Ryans, and assuming Kiko is good to go, you know, in another year or so, you're drafting to replace Ryans because he's not going to play forever, and he's, you know, even if he's healthy. So that really worries me a bit.
And what about Austin?
Hey, speaking of this, Austin, I can't even really figure that out. The whole wide receiver thing I can't quite figure out. But they're running out of options at this point. I still think, you know, I had said hopefully they were going to go safety in the draft. You had mentioned that Mark Eckel had given some insight about drafting wide receivers because there weren't enough good safeties. So, you know, if they go wide receiver, that's okay. I don't see Miles Austin being on this club myself.
Yeah, in fact, Mark just yesterday or today published a mock draft that he and Elliot Shore Parks were doing, and in Mark's mock draft, the Eagles did go wide receiver at number 20. I forget which guy it was, but it was a wide receiver, according to Mark, the way he has it played out.
Well, you know, you mentioned another Dallas Cowboy. I didn't get the details on this because I was driving today, but I understand that Tony Romo was on the Mike and Mike show today and said that he is going to restructure his contract that frees up $13 million of cap space down in Dallas. And I really find that interesting, not as much that he's doing it because they've got needs, but that he didn't do it earlier so they could keep Murray.
Said he would have done it to keep Murray. Yeah, I don't know who you're going to believe because he said it. He was going to do it to keep Murray, but I don't know. He didn't do it beforehand, so who knows?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. And unless this is their play to try to make a move to get Peterson somehow, but they're going to have to do some crazy things of their own to make that happen because that has to be a trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, hey, before we get all the way to the top of the hour, it's that time. As we talked previously, you picked the Phillies season dead on last season, and I missed it by one game. So what will it be this year? Over, under 100 losses?
All right. Remember, they won 73 games last year and the year before. So here's my thinking. The Vegas over-under is 68.5, which sounds high, and that means they will probably exceed that number since Vegas usually knows what it's doing. But I'm not in that camp. I just don't see it. Not enough talent there. And a couple of the quality guys will likely be traded either right before the season or mid-season, further diminishing the talent. So I think they're going to flirt with 100 losses and, in fact, get there. My prediction, it was 4 years ago that they won 102 games. This year, they're going to lose 102. 60 and 102. Sorry, Phil's fans, but that's my projection.
Wow.
60.
That's even beyond what I was thinking. But I will hit it dead on this year since I was only off by one game last year, and I will get back at you. I am going to go 63-99.
It's funny you mention that.
At Citizens Bank Park this year.
That was going to be my answer initially because I was thinking they were going to flirt with 100 losses, and that would be the big drama all through September. You know, would they avert 100 losses? And I thought, well, they'll tough it out and they'll finish 63-99. But then I said, no, this roster is just not good enough. They're not going to do it. So I went 60. You're going with 63. We'll see. I hope we're both way wrong, by the way.
No, me too. Certainly me too. But you know what? I don't know that you will have to worry about it being toughed out in September because you will be watching the Eagles.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
There are going to be a lot of empty seats at Citizens Bank Park.
Yes, there are.
So, hey, switching back for just a second to the Eagles, you know, I wanted to let you know and let our listeners know that we're pleased to announce that we will have our first Eagles draft show on April the 15th. That'll be 2 weeks from today. And we will have the Eagles draft expert Fran Duffy with us. If you remember, Fran last year was with us, and he did a fantastic job. For those that don't know Fran, he actually works for the Eagles in the video group or whatever he does there. But he is a draft guru. I mean, it's what he does. It's his passion. And he watches more film than anybody probably that's not being paid to do it. That you'll know. And if you recall last year, Chad, I want to go back and listen to last year's show again, but, you know, he was huge on Teddy Bridgewater. And I know he was disappointed that Bridgewater dropped in the draft like he did, but when it was all said and done, Bridgewater was the quarterback that probably had the best rookie year. So Fran knows his stuff.
Yeah, he sure does. Fran was awesome last year. He really does know what he's talking about. So we'll have him on the 15th. And then we're going to have our pal Mark Eckel from NJ.com on the 29th, which, by the way, will be about 24 hours before the draft gets underway.
That's right. So we're going to have it covered. We're not going to be on next week on the 8th, but we'll be back on the 15th for a complete Eagles draft show, unless there's some other breaking news like Cole Hamels is already 3-0. Or something like that. We'll be back on the 15th to talk Eagles. We'll be back on the 29th to talk Eagles.
Yep.
All right. Wait, Chad, our friends at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, you know, they're celebrating their 20th anniversary. It's been going on for 3 months already, and they're doing it with a bang. And I know you're excited about this Saturday's guest. Going to be at the store. They're going to have the Flyers voices, Lauren Hart and Lou Nolan, both in the store. So that's kind of cool. Then, on April 4th. Then I have former Eagles Jamal Jackson and Ike Reese on April 11th. And Philly's 1980 World Champion second baseman Manny Trio will be in the store on April 12th. As you know, Carl does a great job getting the guests in, and we hope that you can support their efforts. He has a Facebook page, website, so please check them out for all the details. You trying to head over there to get Lauren Hart on?
I'm going to try. I'll see what I can do because, that is something I'm excited about checking out.
Absolutely. Hey, I haven't spoken to you for a few days, and we missed our prep for the show, obviously. But
we missed the meeting again.
We played the other day against a high school team down here. The pitching coach was former Philly world champion Scott Ayer.
Yes, I saw you say that, and you also noted that you kicked their butt.
Well, we did. We beat them 12-1. But he has two boys to play on that team that are both big kids. Neither one of them pitched in that game. I don't know if they are pitchers, but they're pretty big kids, absolutely. And so got to speak to Scott a little bit, and it's funny because the umpire of that game, as we walked by him, our head coach walked by him and saw that he had a Phillies tattoo on his arm. So he said, "Hey, our coach over there is a Philly, you know, crazy Philly fan." So I go over and I talk to the ump between innings. He not only has a Phillies tattoo, he's got a Flyers one right above it, and he's got a Eagles one right above it all the way up his arm, and he's a 1975 graduate of Upper Darby High School. So it was good to see some people from the home front.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, all right. Well, Chad, what's your you have any closing shots for the week?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I'm disappointed in the fact that I'm going to miss the Phillies home opener on Monday, just the second time since the new ballpark opened. I will be out of town, as we discussed last time. But I know it's going to be a long season for the Phillies. At least it seems like that's going to be the case. But you know what? It's still fun to go to the ballpark. So if you get the opportunity, go to the ballpark. Go see the Phillies. Support the team. You know, have a couple of bags of popcorn or boxes of popcorn, whatever. And if you don't want to go to Citizens Bank Park, go to Reading, because I'll tell you, the Reading Fightin' Phils this season are going to be fun to watch, because they're going to have Aaron Nola pitching. They're going to have Ben Lively in the rotation. The new guy that they got also from the Dodgers in the Rollins deal will be down there. And once he's healthy, I believe J.P. Crawford will be playing shortstop there. So you might want to go check out the future of the big league Phillies by taking a little trip to Reading. I plan to do so, and maybe I'll see you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Reading's always a fun place to go. Neat little ballpark, and like you say, good baseball. Anybody that's coming to the big leagues is going through there. So,
and I've never been there. Believe it or not, I've never been to the ballpark in Reading, so I've got to do it this year.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful place. Well, hey, I do want to ask you about one other thing, and we didn't get a chance to ask T-Mac about it, but how about Michael Jack Smith doubling his duties in the broadcast booth this year?
Yeah, instead of just Sundays, he's going to do Saturday and Sunday on home weekend ball games. So good for him. To be honest, I wasn't a huge Schmidt fan the first time around when he did this years and years ago, but I think he got a little better last year. So maybe he's been working on his craft in the broadcast booth. And I'm sure he'll bring a lot to the table. And I'm really excited also about hearing Ben Davis, because I think Ben really, really knows his stuff. I hear him on WIP from time to time. And I had the opportunity to meet him about a year and a half ago and talk to him a little bit. What a nice guy. And in addition to bringing some hair to the broadcast booth, he does know his baseball.
Well, you know, I agree with you about Mike Schmidt. And, you know, I thought last year, I thought he did a really, really good job. I think he I'll put it this way, so, and hopefully it doesn't sound too wrong, is he is a much more humbled human being these days as he gets older than he was back the first go-around. And
yep.
I thought the insight that he brought to the booth of the way the game was played, I thought was really, really good last year. And if he keeps that going this year, I think it'll be great.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he did put more into it last year. I think the first time around when he did it several years ago, he was just kind of going through the motions. But I think last year he really did make an effort to, you know, provide some insight that a former ball player could.
Yeah. Well, my parting shot right quick before we go is I think by the time we speak the next time, almost certainly the time after that, but in the next 2 weeks, I think the Flyers will be looking for a new head coach.
I don't think
there's much chance that Coach Berube will be around too long.
And I hope they go outside the organization.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. They always seem to keep bringing them guys back, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank the voice of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy, for joining us, as well as Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chachesko, this is Bill Furman, helping you enjoy the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, April 15th. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. You can also like our blog talk page and get all of our updates as well. Thanks for listening. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.